We present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jubb.
Hello, and welcome to the News Quiz.
We start with a cutting from the Wrexham Daily Post, read by Corrie Caulfield.
Fire crews have rescued a couple's wedding day. St John the Baptist Church in Penymunnith was found smoke-filled after an organ overheated this morning.
Our thanks to Val Cooper, Jane Williams and all the other mucky-minded souls who sent us that bit of local warmth. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right Hugo Rifkind and Kerry Godleyman. Opposite them, on my left, Bridget Christie and Andrew Maxwell. So, Hugo, whose speech covered a broad band of proposals?
So this would be the Queen's speech.
Very good. Queen's speech, which happened
this week. And it really got me thinking, the Queen's speech, because at the moment there are lots of people kind of arguing that all our weird laws come from Brussels, and if we leave the EU, we won't have any weird laws. And they're arguing this at a time when the government's entire sort of proposal for the next year of government is being read out by a 90-year-old woman in fancy dress wearing a giant tiara, who by law is the only person allowed to eat a swan. And so you wonder if that necessarily makes sense. But look, there she was, reading out the government's demands, sitting in her throne, looking, as one Guardian columnist put it, like the poshest hostage ever. And they were all there, they were all dressed up, having a wonderful time. You know, page boys and horn blowers and beef eaters and Michael Gove was looking very pleased. He wears this costume with a ruff because he's Lord Chancellor, and he's sort of like a cross between Austin Powers and the Child Catcher. So Black Rod comes and bangs on the door, and Dennis Skinner does his traditional heckle. Been doing it since 1642, I think. And all the MPs, they walk in pairs to the House of Lords, where they're normally like not allowed to go, because MPs don't go in the House of Lords. And I always think it must be really weird for them. It's like a glimpse of their own future, you know. It's like kids going to an old people's home, thinking, like, one day that'll be you. They go in pairs. They pair up to walk through. Cameron went with Corbyn, and Cameron kept trying to make conversation, and Corbyn was just having none of it, just kind of going, yeah. Because he must hate it, Corbyn, because, you know, his whole worldview is he does everything he doesn't want Britain to be. He wants Britain to be sort of black and white and like the 1970s and made of breeze blocks and miserable and socialist. Whereas Cameron looks around the House of Lords and he feels quite at home because it reminds him of his school. So then she got up there and she announced various policies. Broadband is now a right. Something's happening with prisons. I think they said they were going to build a spaceport.
And is a spaceport, that's not where spaceships take off from it. They just dock there.
It's just in case any turn up and want to land.
I find watching the Queen's speech, the sort of long build-up to it, is completely baffling, I suppose.
She got a lift this time. She took a lift.
Uber?
No.
She was prepared to share with someone, but it is cheaper, of course.
That'd be great. She'd go Uber Lux.
Yeah.
Is it like the top rank of Uber, where you get the golden carriage pulled by horses?
Yeah, that's what she came in. No, I saw that she got a lift, and I just assumed they meant a standard chair lift. I thought, it was the first time ever, but I thought, cut her some slack. She's 90. Mm-hmm. Let the woman get a lift.
But
and
also...
they were like, she's not really up to it.
Do you think that was the message?
I think that was what they were.
Do you not think it's a position of strength being in a golden carriage? It's basically a cry for help.
It may well be.
I mean, you know, I grew up in a republic, so we get none of that.
Yeah.
So it's quite nice to once a year turn on the TV and see a rise. Britain is entirely run by pimps. So 500 pimps. Who wouldn't want to wear ermine once in a while? So soft. Where do you get it?
Hugo, where does one get one's ermine?
I do have a friend who is a peer of the realm.
Yeah.
And he was telling me he had to borrow some robes to go for the opening of Parliament last year. And when he sent them back to whoever he borrowed them from, he took them to the post office. And they said, what's in there? And he showed them, because it's some robes. And they wrote, Santa costume.
Once they'd finally described the agonising act of her actually getting there and starting to speak, then what did she actually talk about, Her Majesty?
Fizzy drinks.
That's the possibility of the sugar tax.
Yeah, the sugar tax was in there.
Several times before that was up there.
There's a lot on prisons. Prison, they're going to make prison nice.
She seems absolutely obsessed with prisons. Couldn't stop talking about them. I presume you get an idea of what she watches on Netflix. she is well into prisons.
I think the big idea is to flog the prisons off because they're in lovely parts of real estate. I mean, I don't know how they're living inside, but they're incredibly well located. And then they're going to move the scallywags out to where Londoners don't want to live, like Norfolk. I recorded a live album in my hometown prison. It's called Mountjoy Prison in Dublin, and it's another kind of Victorian slop out, Nick. And
was this an album of songs, or what?
It was just me doing stand up and fending off advances.
Were you?
Johnny Cash, a stand-up Johnny Cash.
Yeah, I thought I was going to be like Johnny. I thought it was going to be like ding, 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 ding. Oh no!
It turns out
murderers are quite nasty hecklers. Dude, before it went on, literally, there's me and 400 murderers, and me dad at the back because he's game. It's me and 400 murderers, and just before I walked on, the daddy of the wing came up to me and just looked me up and down and went, "You're a lovely size for a hostage." all I could think to do was curtsy.
Yeah. To think that is what Cameron was whispering to Corbyn.
But this is something...
Or a rather nice size for a hostage. We could put you in a barrel and roll you down the house step.
Perniciously, this is the Queen's speech, where Her Majesty outlined the government's forthcoming legislative programme and was able to speak into a camera without at any point gratuitously bad-mouthing the Chinese. In sweeping reforms to the prison system, weekend inmates will be introduced, some prisons will be allowed to operate semi-autonomously, and Justice Secretary Michael Gove will be issued with a sock full of snooker balls and the ceremonial title of the Daddy. The Queen promised a digital revolution fueled by internet connectivity by rolling 10 megabit broadband out across the country, allowing Brian from the policy office to once again win the prize for getting the Queen to say the most words that she clearly didn't understand. Shadow Defence Secretary Emily Thornberry repeatedly mouthed bollocks during David Cameron's speech, but was not reprimanded by the Speaker, who realised she was merely replying to Andy Burnham's question, "What are you planning to get Jeremy for his birthday?" Tim Farron pointed out that of the 30 announcements, 28 had been made before, leading to cries of shame from his fellow Lib Dems and cries of, "Please tell us who you are," from literally everyone else. 2 points to Hugo. Kerry, which doctors are back in the house?
Well, this is to do with the junior doctors' strike. There has been some movement, lots of discussion. Jeremy Hunt is feeling optimistic that he might have resolved it, but the BMA still need to read it over and take it back to the doctors and make a decision about it. So it's in reference to that. Jeremy Hunt is very determined to stand firm that he's going to reform the NHS and make it a 7-day-a-week service and things of that nature. Doctors should be able to Skype or email or emoji their diagnoses. To people. You could just send a little aubergine if you're not feeling very good, or that little poo with eyes, that would be quite... So that's one way of doing it. Most people are getting quite used to having to self-diagnose now. Anyway, I do a lot of self-diagnosis on the internet. I am a GP, a Google practitioner. It's quite risky business, especially if you're a little bit of a hypochondriac, because it's sort of, you just tap in your symptoms and then a sort of carousel of doom kind of opens up to you. It's like a generation game for hypochondriacs with flu, tonsillitis, cuddly toy, teas made, Ebola, meningitis.
Why have they been able to come to an agreement now?
They haven't yet, have they? It's not been agreed.
Well, it's been agreed with the BMA,
but the junior doctors
have to vote on it as well.
I mean, Jeremy Hunt was on the TV just before this agreement, and he was going, it's really important that this dispute ends. And I was thinking, why is he saying that? He's got a rash. He's got a rash and he's been putting it off for months now. And it's just too late, and he's got to go to the doctor. He's Googled it.
Yeah.
He thinks if this strike goes on, my rash is going to cause real trouble.
Especially if it flares up on a Sunday.
These junior doctors are grown-ups. They're not junior at all. I thought they'd be like doctor versions of the Muppet Babies. little junior doctor.
How long into the dispute did you realise that we were talking about adults and not... not children?
What I'm saying is, they're not like student doctors.
Did you used to think that Animal Hospital was a programme about animals who worked as doctors and nurses?
Ridiculous. Everybody knows a cloven hoof can't hold a scalpel. Jeez.
Does anyone think this could be over?
Well, I mean, the doctors need to decide whether they agree with the deal. I mean, the junior doctors themselves are in a slightly weird position because they were supported by the BMA in their strike. And now the BMA is backing this deal, but the junior doctors aren't yet.
We don't need you, doctors. We can always fall back on the homeopaths. Yeah. Right? So smug, doctors. What do you think? They're holding us to ransom, like as if colour therapists don't exist. Right? With their science and that. Do you think we don't have dream catchers?
There's all these superbugs. These have been in the news this week as well. So we're going to need dream catchers and aromatherapy because antibiotics are not working.
That's right, yeah. David Cameron has commissioned a report. Do you know what it said? Yeah. The findings?
It said that antibiotics can't combat bacteria anymore because we're all taking too many antibiotics. I take them if I have a hangover.
By 2050...
Someone's going to die every 3 seconds. That's
by 2050?
By 2050.
Every 3 seconds, yes, somebody will die.
Someone will die.
What a nightmare.
We do have an ageing population.
All this living.
We do have... There are as many 90-year-olds as 5-year-olds now, I think.
But it is, yeah, well, if you go to a playground, I mean, you can hardly get your children on the swings, can you? Those people that let their grandparents walk up a slide when there are children waiting to go down, they are absolutely the scum of the earth, aren't they?
Honestly, stop living. The retirement was built... You were meant to have 1 year of retirement after 50 years down the pit. You were meant to wheeze away, say goodbye to the family and do the decent thing and die at 40.
We've lost so much.
Now they're on and on with their watercolours and their memory clubs. Oh. Life begins at 60. It shouldn't.
Avuncularly, this is the news that after 8 days of strikes and 10 months of talk, a junior doctor pay deal has possibly, finally, been reached. Jeremy Hunt said that the deal would finally usher in a seven-day NHS, giving sick patients 2 extra days in which their doctor is too busy to see them. In other medical news, a report commissioned by David Cameron suggests that antibiotic resistance could lead to the loss of 10 million lives a year by 2050. With recent warnings of spiralling global temperatures, tensions between nuclear superpowers, artificial intelligence and now antibiotic resistance, the upcoming apocalypse has very much taken on the feel of a lucky dip. Economist Lord O'Neill says we must stop treating antibiotics like sweets, although since I started rewarding my children with the occasional blister pack of amoxicillin, I have to say their teeth have never been cleaner. 2 points to Kerry. Bridget, what has driven a wedge between ISIL and Hitler?
Oh, well... OK, so this is the EU referendum, which has descended into petty scaremongering on both sides. Boris Johnson compared the EU to the Third Reich by saying that Hitler failed at unification and the EU was just another attempt to do this by different methods. And then David Cameron said that ISIS and Putin would probably be happy with a Brexit vote. I don't know. I mean... We've all used Hitler and ISIS and Putin. I mean, you're a parent, Miles. I mean, I often say to my kids, you know, like if they won't brush their teeth, for example, I would often say, look, obviously it's up to you. This house is a democracy. You don't have to brush your teeth if you don't want to. But if you don't, ISIS and Putin would probably be very happy with that. And my son stays in his room quite a lot, so I say, you know, you can stay in your room if you want to, which was, I mean, Hitler was in his bunker for quite... You know, I'm not saying you are Hitler, I'm just saying that there are comparisons between... I mean, we all do it. I mean, the funny thing...
For a guy who enjoys a drinking game like I do, I'm thoroughly enjoying a referendum. This is my drinking game. I drink every time somebody from the Leave campaign mentions the Second World War. I've been pissed for months. I think for some people, Europe is where big bad things come from. You know? There's a certain type of English person for whom Dad's Army is a documentary.
Hugo, as an unbelievably Scottish man, how do you feel about this?
Well, no one will understand because of the depth of my accent, but I'll try and speak clearly. It was actually quite clever what Boris said, despite being moronic, because what he said was that the EU wanted to unify Europe into a single nation like Hitler did, and everyone went off about the Hitler bit because that was the mad bit. But actually, the EU doesn't want to unify Europe into a single nation. That's just what people who want to leave the EU say. Actually, you know, it's a union of nations with the nations sort of remaining there. And he sort of smuggled that bit in by saying this absurd thing, because it was a really absurd thing, the idea that, you know, Hitler wants the same thing as the EU by different methods. It's like saying that all Harold Shipman wanted to do was reduce his workload. But, I mean, Cameron's not being much better just because ISIS would be pleased about it. You know, ISIS is probably pleased when they get sort of 2-for-1 deal at Starbucks.
Yeah.
Well, I understand the sort of democratic point of it. Like, people are saying, I don't want somebody who I don't know to decide, you know, on policy and laws that affect my own life and I don't even know them. But I think there should be many more people deciding on our laws. I don't want to know any of them because I hate all the ones that I do know. I think it's like a marriage. Right, OK, so I'm married.
Yeah.
Right. But I would much rather there was 28 states deciding on what happens within my own marriage, because I don't know.
Do you want another 27 husbands? Is that what you're saying?
I'm just saying it would be easier.
Pediatrically, this is the EU debate, which appallingly is ongoing. This week, the rhetoric was ratcheted up, with David Cameron saying ISIL would cheer Brexit, while Boris Johnson claimed that the EU were carrying on the work of Hitler, both of which make a lot of sense, given Hitler's lifelong support for human rights legislation and ISIL's unyielding hatred of farming subsidies. Boris Johnson has also got in trouble by claiming the EU stopped shops from selling bananas in bunches of more than 2 or 3, a fact which is easily disproved simply by going to a supermarket and doing your own grocery shop, instead of having an underling do it while you busy yourself waving small flags from atop a double-decker bus after impregnating an art consultant.
Seriously?
It won't necessarily go out, but you must try these things. Ken Livingstone popped up to tell the world that Hitler would not have been in favour of the EU. Good of Ken to keep us in touch with the latest in Hitler's thinking. Especially now the big man's no longer able to speak up for himself. What with Ken and Boris, it does feel like British politics is now a game where you score more points the more times you mention Hitler in the space of 60 seconds, which, incidentally, was one of the original rules of Just a Minute. Lord Heseltine criticised Boris for his comments, saying that Mrs Thatcher would have voted for Remain. Well, when people have already brought up Iceland and Hitler, there's only one way to go. David Cameron suggested ISIL leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi was probably in favour of Britain leaving the EU. Al-Baghdadi may have some interesting views on Brexit, which is why we're doubly sad he couldn't be on the show tonight. Although thanks to Hugo for stepping in at the last minute. 2 points to Bridget. Andrew, which bidder came first because of the Second Amendment?
Pardon? Sorry, why have all their questions been, tell us about the junior doctors, and then I got the cryptic one?
Okay, I'm
Lazarus gonna... may have risen, but why is the toad on fire? This is not going to dispel any of the rumours that we're actually in the Secret Service together, you know?
Sorry, I understood that you people enjoyed riddles.
That's limericks you're thinking of. I'm terrible at riddles. I don't get them. Nor can I, and my entire family have discovered this, including the children, that if the missus spells a word out loud, I can't then put it back together.
Really?
I have to then write them down. And then it's not.
So if I say to you, D-O-G, what have I just said?
Oh, no, yeah, I can... God, that's easy.
I think we could diagnose you without Google, Andrew. let's try. Otherwise, I'll just say, talk about this subject, which we've given, now I think about it, quite an inappropriate intro to. Andrew, which bidder came first because of the Second Amendment?
This is about the grubby business of American gun business. It's down in Florida. There was that case a couple of years back of Zimmerman. In Florida, they have a stand your ground law, it's called, which is basically legalized murder. You don't even need to call out or say you're calling the police. You can just shoot somebody. Whereas, you know, here in a democracy, if there's a burglar in your house, you got to fight him in the kitchen. Right? Which at the time is traumatic, but it's good for liberty. You know what I mean? And this guy Zimmerman, he shot dead in his gated community in Florida a black teenager called Trayvon Martin. And because of the stand your ground law in Florida, he got away with it. And there was, you know, uproar. It was sort of one of the first cases, and then there was, off the back of that, there was the Ferguson riots, and which has given ground to a civic movement in America called Black Lives Matter, which, of course, they do. This guy is now auctioning the gun. He's auctioning off the gun, and he plans to give the proceeds to organisations that are campaigning against Black Lives Matter. Yeah, I know.
He has sold it. He's actually sold the gun.
He says that's where he's going to give the proceeds to. It's just, I don't know, guns. Like, I love Americans, you know. When you get into the heartland, oh, my God, they're friendly. So friendly. Unbelievably friendly. Psychotically friendly. The most friendly? Unbelievable. You want a kidney? I'll give you a kidney. I don't even care what same blood group. Just take it away in a bag. Have a kidney. Real friendly. All you got to do to send people to apocalyptic rage is guns. It's the word guns with a question mark. Guns? It's my right. It's my right to have a gun. Yeah, why'd you need a machine gun? To defend my family. What? In your wooden house? Aren't you the middle piggy in the story? It's just, there's no rhyme or reason to it. They simply will not go back to fisticuffs. There's nothing worse than seeing a fat cop in America with a gun. You know, like, if you do something wrong, he's not chasing you. That's it. I got a little silver buddy here who's going to do the chasing. Welcome to Alabama.
Speaking of Americans and guns, did you see that video of Ted Cruz making machine gun bacon? The way you make machine gun bacon is you get raw bacon and you wrap it around the barrel of your assault rifle and then you fire off a few rounds down your range and the heat of it cooks the bacon. And Ted Cruz, the man who at the time was running for president, did this, fired off his rounds, picked up his gun, nibbled off the barrel and went, machine gun bacon. This is the guy who wants to, like Homer Simpson, machine gun bacon. The guy who wants to be president. Which is like, it's particularly alarming as a Brit because we're lucky in this country. We're just so fortunate that it's completely impossible to imagine being ruled over by a man who would stick his weapon into a pork product.
Unworthily, this is the case of Florida's George Zimmerman, who has sold at auction for $138,900 the gun he used to shoot unarmed teenager Trayvon Martin. There are many things you could say about George Zimmerman's moral compass in selling a weapon that shot an unarmed black teenager, but you certainly can't argue with his 100% feedback rating on eBay. I think it was probably a good idea to buy the gun, because it's been proven that if you actually have a gun, you're statistically at less risk of being shot by George Zimmerman. It's outrageous that someone can profit from the proceeds of what everyone knows is an unpunished crime, said the manager of O.J. Simpson's second-hand glove shop. Zimmerman reacted to the controversy by criticising Trayvon Martin's parents in what experts are already calling an absolute Ken Livingston of a public relations strategy. And at the end of round one, the scores are Bridget and Andrew have 4, but Hugo and Kerry have 5.
We start round two with a cutting from the Construction Inquirer.
A specialist firm which empties site toilets has been hit with fines of £40,000 for illegal dumping.
Thanks to Ross Jackson, Chris Owen Hughes and George Owen for sending us that rubbish. Hugo, who has got a lecture about their standards?
Universities. The government has decided that universities are going to be ranked like schools are ranked. This is going to be sort of Ofsted, but for universities. And universities that underperform, that don't do well, they're going to reduce the amount of fees they can charge. So as a sort of incentive to universities to do better, as in if they do worse, they won't be able to charge as much in fees, which is kind of counterintuitive, because it means if you're a struggling university, you're going to lose money, and you think you need more money to be better. Because with schools, if you've got a struggling school, they give them more money, but they're going to sort of starve the struggling universities of money. They'll be able to charge students less. It'll be cheaper to go there, but you won't want to go there because it'll be rubbish. It's a very confusing story, but I don't really understand what university's for anymore, anyway. Because in my day, it was all about drinking wine in mugs and having stupid hair and failing to find anybody to have sex with you. Whereas these days, they don't even watch daytime TV anymore if you're a student because they've got Netflix. And I mean, it's a weird world. I went back to my old college a few years ago, and I saw where my old room was, which was the room that everyone wanted because it was just above the bar. and now nobody wants to live there because it's just above the bar. I don't know what's going on. Students these days, they pay their fees so it matters, so they work and they have standards and they want to achieve in life and they're not alcoholics. And if they didn't have all that crippling debt, I might feel rather threatened.
What was George Osborne discovered to have written in 2003?
He was really anti-student fees, wasn't he, back then? He said he was totally opposed to student fees.
He criticised the introduction of university tuition fees. He said they were very unfair and they were a tax on learning. But yes, he's slightly changed his view now. What about the University of East Anglia? Why have they been in the news?
They've banned mortarboards.
They have. Why? Well, why?
Because they could get in your eye if they fall in your face on graduation day, people chucking them in the air, and they could get harmed.
Somebody did get harmed last year, and that's why they've stopped it. What? One day we're going to live without harm. I can't wait
for that. It's health and safety gone mad, didn't it? Well, but there's a photography company that said that they can superimpose the mortarboard into your graduation...
That's right, yeah.
..into your graduation photograph.
They could have them on wires, couldn't they? Just
Oh, that's a good idea. And you just can everyone go and stand underneath the floating sort of mortarboard.
Boppers with mortarboards on.
Yeah. We need to be a bit more stringent with evolution. If you can't survive a mortarboard attack, you know, all this year's
If bacteria can survive antibiotics, I think we can cope with mortarboards.
It's actually, to be fair, they haven't banned them. They've suggested that in group photos that, you know, you might not throw them.
Oh, that's not as good as Scoop, though, is it? It's better if you ban them, because it's funny.
Lamer. We're just suggesting it. Oh, God.
No, you're not allowed.
Well, the minute we ban bear baiting, it's all gone downhill.
Couldn't you just take the corners off? If the corners are the problem...
Yeah, they should just redesign mortarboards. Yeah. They should have a
Is that what you want?
They should just have a sort of circular.
You want all the students to throw a fez in the air, do you? Is that what you want, Sadiq Khan? You're not taking my foreskin.
It's nice to hear some common sense at last.
Those toddler things you get for cupboards, you could put those on the corners.
Toddler things?
You know, to stop toddlers locked. Knocking into things.
This is where we keep our cupboard toddlers. You open a door.
You know those things you put on drawers and corners?
Appalling.
Handles.
Appalling.
No, those
locks.
They're like little bits of foam to stop a toddler knocking themselves out.
Yeah, okay, yes.
That's how a toddler learns. Ouch, learn. Yeah. If it's constantly boing, 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 one day I'll be the leader of the Tory party. I can say I do anything. Children need to hurt themselves and that's how they learn.
But you're not suggesting, seriously, that we all start throwing mortarboards at children out there. As a way of preparing them for their graduation in 21 years' time. Theatrically, this is the new white paper on universities, allowing those whose teaching is rated as excellent to charge higher fees. Universities will be ranked for the first time under an Ofsted-style system, Ofsted-style being government shorthand for utterly shambolic. It'll be easier now for dissatisfied undergraduates to switch universities, though I must point out that there is nothing to do in Aberystwyth apart from hate myself and scream at the sea is not a valid reason for switching. Also this week, it emerged that George Osborne wrote in a letter he sent in 2003 that tuition fees were a tax on learning and that a Conservative government would abolish them. The 12-year-old French schoolboy who received the letter was bemused by this response from his new pen pal, especially since all he'd asked was, "Do you like Steven Seagal?" And the University of East Anglia has banned the throwing of mortarboards in graduation photos on the grounds of health and safety. A local firm said that for a small fee, mortarboards can be digitally added to your graduation photographs, as can dinosaurs. 2 points to Hugo. Kerry, have a listen to this. Well, who could fail to be deeply and profoundly moved by that? Kerry, whose package went down like a bomb?
This is to do with the cancelled football match between Bournemouth and Manchester United. There was an evacuation at Old Trafford because they found a bomb that actually turned out to be a fake that was being used for a training thing, and the security company had left it in the toilet. And the police said it looked like a real bomb, which I imagine it was a sort of black spherical thing with a lit fuse. and it said TNT on the side. But it turned out, actually, a real bomb looks like a mobile phone gaffer taped to a pipe. And on the side of it, it said, "This is a fake bomb. If found, please call Steve on 07974. It had his number on there, and yet they still thought it was a fake bomb. The bloke was very embarrassed. I felt sorry for him. We've all made mistakes at work, haven't we? It happened. I remember when I used to work in a hairdressing salon, I took the rods out of Mrs. Blakely's perm before I'd put the neutraliser on. It was devastating. But
I think we all know what the consequences of that would be.
Well, it didn't take miles. It meant that she didn't have curly hair. When they did the rematch, on Tuesday, I think, and all the Bournemouth supporters were shouting, "Do you want us to check the box for you?"
If I saw something that looked like something but said on it that it was a fake thing, that would make me even more suspicious of what? It's like a double bluff.
Would you think it was sort of ISIL using reverse psychology?
Well, I don't know. Right, okay, so I was in the park.
These are the landmines you can tread on.
Yeah.
I wonder if I ought to tread.
Yeah, these will light up and make a tune. So I was in the park at the weekend with my children, and there was a guy just sat, he was a really dodgy looking bloke, sat on the bench.
Your husband?
Oh, yeah. Anyway, if he had a T-shirt saying, "I am definitely not a paedophile," that would not make me feel reassured.
If I saw something that looked like suspect advice, I would, you see something, say something. I would get straight onto the police and speak in a different accent. Hello. Hello, yes, my name's Miles.
This is like a bomb training exercise, yeah?
Yeah.
Firstly, I'm thinking that training exercise hasn't gone too well if they lost one of the bombs. Yeah?
But there was like 16 bombs, so to only lose one bomb...
But, okay, 16. Secondly, I can understand...
If you go to the beach and you come back with like missing one flip-flop or something, you'd think, that wasn't bad, actually. There's a bit more sand in the boot than I would like, but we've only lost one flip-flop. That's not a bad...
Okay, so you finish your bomb training exercise, you failed to find one of the bombs... What are we going to do? I know what you do. It's got a bloody phone sellotape to it. Phone the thing.
If you were in the toilet going to the loo... So,
yeah, I'm on a bomb.
Yeah, if a bomb rang in the other cubicle... You'd be like, hello? You'd leave it.
I've got your phone.
Phantasmagorically, this is the suspect device found at the Old Trafford football ground prior to a match between Manchester United and Bournemouth. The device was initially thought to be a terrorist bomb, which makes sense given that terror groups have a long record of sympathy with Bournemouth's painful and bloody struggle for independence from Dorset. The device was found hanging on the back of a toilet door, thus being in the curious position of both leading to an evacuation and being spotted during one. The device had been left behind by a private security company following an exercise where they simulated the controlled destruction of the reputation of a private security company. 2 points to Kerry. Andrew, who digs graves too much?
So this is goths. You know, middle-class disappointments.
I was a goth.
Now look at you. You've moved on. You're not still swaying around, listening to Bauhaus.
How do you know?
It's basically, there is the great town of Whitby, which hosts one of the world's largest gathering of goths, the Goth Weekend. And they come from all over the world and mope around. But there's so many of them, such as the popularity of the moping. The popularity in Whitby of this giant goth do, and all the goths hanging around in the graveyard up on the hill looking over the sea, means that the council want to build a fake graveyard for them to hang around in.
Like Kidzania.
Like what?
Like Kidzania, sort of like a simulated world for children to go around. Like a Truman Show graveyard. All right.
But then...
What's Kidzania?
Kidzania is this place in Westfield. I had to take my daughter for her birthday. It's horrific,
Mom. In the shopping centre?
It's in the shopping centre. Has anyone been?
No.
I haven't made this up, by the way. It's a real place, and it's like a street inside a building, and it's like miniature businesses and shops and...
Like how miniature?
Well, like for children. Not like for borrowers. And then kids can go and like work in a shop or be doctors. Well, they won't want to be doctors, will they, at the moment? But
can they go up a chimney?
They can go up a chimney. They can clean an air conditioning pipe.
Wow. I'm sorry.
It's really expensive as well.
In this miniature town for children to play in.
Yeah.
Are you seriously saying there's a graveyard?
No. But they did a simulated terrorist attack because they did a...
In Kidzania?
In Kidzania. While children were because, like, there was a fire service and then the police service and whatever. And then they sort of... Because every half hour they do a little emergency thing and then they all come towards a burning building and tape it off and go, get on the floor now! It's absolutely terrifying.
What, like with a sort of... Carry like with a little five-year-old in a sort of Fisher-Price bomb vest.
As an adult,
you can walk around.
Well, you have to
pretending
supervise.
To be a sort of giant, I suppose. Yeah.
You supervise them, but they get money. They get credit cards and currency, Kidzania pounds or whatever.
Oh, do they get national insurance numbers?
Are there kids going in there and falsely claiming miniature benefits? Because that is disgraceful.
Yeah, there is a job centre, there's a recycling centre.
There are lots of miniature boarded up shops as a result of there being a Westfield nearby.
They don't look... They may well get a graveyard. Do you know the other thing that Whitby's famous for?
Is this the reason why the Goths are there? Because Dracula showed up there. He was Romanian. He didn't go through proper channels. he got the soft underbelly of the British border, which is Whitby.
There's lots
Has anybody ever read the actual book? There's a great bit in it, right, where you realise just how classist Victorian Britain was, right? So Jonathan Harker, right, he's a British lawyer. He gets invited to go to this mysterious castle in what is now Romania because this obscure count on the edge of Christendom, he wants to buy some property in Kent, right? Some shady Eastern European dude with a lot of money wants to buy property in Britain. And this lawyer doesn't care and makes it happen. I don't know whether you can relate to that. The point is, Jonathan Harker, he goes out there, right? He gets off at the train station. Some cloaked man with no face shows up on a horse and cart. Everybody else says, get away from him, right? Anyway, he jumps on because, you know, there's a big fat fee to be earned. So he goes up to the castle. He has dinner with the Count. The Count doesn't eat any food. He thinks nothing of it. The next night, he goes to bed. He wakes up in the night to see somebody scaling face first down the wall of the castle like a lizard. He thinks nothing of it, right? Nothing. The moment where he flips out in raw terror is he walks in the room to find the Count making his bed, and he discovers that the Count doesn't have any servants.
What were you going to say the other thing Whitby is?
The other thing, other than that, that Whitby's famous for is Whitby Lucky Ducks.
Is this a sort of miniature world in which ducks...
I'm like a goth Lucky Duck, man.
You could get a little zipped, buttoned goth Lucky Duck.
I've got a cloak. Like, I'm, you know, I don't dress like a goth, but I'm into it, you know, sometimes. Full moon. I've got a 17th century Witchfinder General's cloak. It's pretty sick.
Have you got any of the old kit, Bridget, still?
The old kit?
I mean, yeah.
Well, it's not like a kit. It's just clothes. What, God, you've got to buy all the bits separately? You know anything, you posh people? What?
I'll be honest with you, I've never known a goth that isn't posh. There's no working class goths.
They're real.
No, we weeded them out a long time ago.
You do have a point, right? Because when I was 12, 13, we were goths in the 80s. mid-80s in Gloucester.
You and your friends? You and your family?
Yeah, me and my friends. 11 goths, all different ages. Yeah. No, that would look so strange. And so we would go to the church graveyard and buy bottles of cider and sit there and be weird and ghosty. But now I go to that same graveyard with my children and they eat olives there, so you do...
Why do you take your kids to a graveyard to eat olives?
It's a nice place to sit.
Take them to the park, Bridget.
No, the graveyard's much better.
What a picture we are slowly building. Musterly, this is the news that an artificial graveyard is planned in Whitby to cater for goths wanting to be photographed amongst local tombstones. The graveyard will cater for the goths while presumably also dealing with Whitby's ongoing corpse problem. The artificial graveyard will act as a lure to attract all the goths in the neighbourhood where they can be, one hopes, exterminated humanely. Of course, if vampires were real, they wouldn't show up on camera, so every selfie would really be a reminder of their own failure. Still, it's boom time for Whitby retailers who have managed to get the slogan, "I wear black on the outside because black is how I feel on the inside," running right through a stick of rock. 2 points to Andrew. Before we reveal vinyl scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Hugo.
Yeah, this was sent in by Eddie Wright, and it's a correction from the New York Times. And it reads, "An article on Monday about a theological battle fought by Muslim imams and scholars in the West against the Islamic State misstated the Snapchat handle used by Suhaib Webb, one of the Muslim leaders speaking out. It is, one word, Imam Suhaib Webb, not, one word, Pimpin' for Paradise 786.
Kerry.
Andy Mitchell in South Ronaldsay received this letter from his MSP on polling day last week. "Dear Andy, I have spent the day visiting polling stations and knocking up voters right across Orkney."
Bridget.
Clive Layton in Coventry noticed this synopsis for The Line of Duty, which was on BBC Two. "A brutal ambush on a police convoy leaves three officers dead and a protected witness fighting for his life. Contains some violence."
Andrew.
This is sent in by Paul Falville of New Malden, Surrey. "A car was swallowed up by a sinkhole in a residential home in Greenwich, East London yesterday. The area is home to several sinkholes, which mining experts blame on disused mines. Estate agents fear house prices may go through the floor."
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final scores. Bridget and Andrew have 8, but this week's winners are Hugo and Kerry with 9. Before we leave you, here is a letter taken from the Essex Chronicle, sent in by Sally Brown of Chelmsford.
"Dear sir, please could you convey my thanks to the three members of the public who came to my wife's aid when she fell heavily on April the 9th. My thanks also go to the ambulance crew who tended to her and calmed her, checked her over, and allowed me to complete my business in Argos."
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Hugo Rifkind, Kerry Godleman, Bridget Christie and Andrew Maxwell. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Corey Caulfield. The chairman's script was written by Lucy Clark, Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch and James Kettle, with additional material by Liam Byrne and Carl Jones. The producer was Paul Sheehan, and it was a BBC Studios production.